Comic Awards. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
And I am Andrew.
Oh, it's so exciting. I always get so excited for the funnies every single time we do this. The 13 times, 12 times previously and today making 13. This is just super exciting. You know, wow. And it makes me look back and go, wow. How have I spent my time over the last 13 years? Poorly, I would say.
Poorly, yes. We still haven't gotten rid of that favorite cover category for some reason.
Yeah. Well, you know, Aaron, you look very nice in your Armani. Paul, the tuxedo t-shirt is an interesting choice, but I respect it.
And no pants.
Well, of course. Are any of us wearing pants?
Not a one of us.
Right.
Formal attire only here. But no pants.
Formal attire from waist up.
13. Gosh.
Wow. It's crazy. Yeah. You know, when I look back over the many years that have come before, I think the thing that I most cherish, the thing that I am the most thankful for, is my brand new extruded ice maker.
I don't even know what that is.
It makes that, you know, chewy ice like you get at Sonic.
Okay, oh, that is awesome.
It is awesome. I love it. I wish that I had bought it earlier in the pandemic.
We're going to have a conversation about where you purchase such a thing, because I surely like that kind of ice.
God, it's wonderful. And I mean, I got
this. It's is like more important than the funnies.
It really is. I mean, certainly I'm thankful for the fact that my wife has been cancer free for a year. Yeah, great. But yes. No, the ice maker is the real miracle here. Yeah. It's awesome, guys. I have argued to, put the story of the ice maker in the Christmas letter, put pictures of it on the Christmas card. I am super fond of my extruded ice maker.
Extruded ice maker. Did you buy it a little sweater? I guess probably not, because that would melt the ice.
No, yeah, we'll put a sweater on it for next Christmas. It'll be part of the sweater pictures.
I'm gonna go ahead and say again that Suzanne is just a saint.
I'd like to point out that Suzanne's the one who pointed out that we needed to buy one.
Oh, I'm looking it up right now.
Oh Lord.
Yeah, where did you buy this?
I got mine on Amazon.
Shocking.
Yeah, shocking, right? I mean, it's where all good things come from.
If there's one thing you all have learned today, it's that dudes in their 40s and 50s fucking love them some ice.
God, I tell you. You know, the thing that I learned when I started working from home full-time is that my ice maker couldn't keep up with me. And, you know,
what are you doing?
all the drinking.
I like ice.
But how much ice are you going through in a day that your ice maker can't keep up with you?
I'm just saying, can't keep up with me.
Oh my! Are we talking ice water?
Ice water, ice, you know, the whole schmear. I mean,
ice milk, ice milk,
gotch,
yeah,
ice tea.
See, I don't have that problem because I drink room temperature water.
Ugh, that's the worst. If it comes down to drinking water that's room temperature, I just will not drink it.
Yeah, Paul's a savage.
I'll just stop.
Who does that?
Yeah, that's you know, you might as well just be call yourself an animal, Paul. You're just a fuzzy little creature that romps through the woods.
I don't know that I've described myself as anything but that. So that works.
But yeah, you know, we're going to turn this into IceCast with Aaron and Polly.
I'm a big fan.
I got to tell you, this machine has the capability of producing 30 pounds of ice a day.
So Whoa. Did you get one of the big, like, industrial size? Or did you get one that sits on your countertop?
Sits on my counter.
Okay. Because I see both here as I look at Amazon.
Yeah.
I'll send you guys a link.
I wonder if you were
in the $3,000 range or the $300 range.
Well, you know, I think the regular price on this was like $500. And right after Christmas, they had a sale. And it was a huge sale. I think I only paid like $180. And, loves me some ice.
His drinks are so cold right now.
I know they are. I mean, you know, my drinks are more ice than drink.
Aaron's icing things that don't even need icing.
That's right. You know what? That would be better iced.
Yeah.
You know, Aaron gets excited about ice like I get excited about the sun shining in the sky. Like,
God, who needs the sun? That is stupid.
Oh my God.
So if we had an award for such, my ice machine would win the funnies this year.
Award for best post-Christmas purchase goes to the extruded ice maker.
Right. I'm really shocked you just didn't put it down as your winner for holy shit moment of the year.
Well, he didn't it get really it should this have year. Been. That'll really be on next year's list. Spoilers.
Oh, good point. Good spoilers. Point.
Depends on when you purchased it.
It came in January, so.
Okay. All right. Spoilers. All right.
I got to tell you, I had to go back. I went back to January because, you know, Comixology, it's difficult. We've discussed the changes to Comixology, but it used to be a lot easier to say, okay, what did I buy this year? Mm-hmm. It was a lot harder with all the changes to their website, their user interface on the app and all that stuff. But, I will say some of my winners – I was pleasantly surprised came out this year because they came out like in January. I'm like, oh yeah, I did like that more than anything I've read since then. Now that being said, it was a good year for comics and ice makers, apparently. Well, no, that was this year. It was a good year for comics. I found that I had no problem identifying at least one option for every category except for one, which we'll talk about here in a few minutes.
Sure.
Paul, if it makes you feel better, I did not have any of those issues with Comixology getting ready for the funnies this year.
Well, but all your answers are going to be Marvel Comics.
Or Dark Horse.
Or Dark Horse.
Or things I bought in print.
Or Image Comics press copies.
Press reviews. Oh, my God.
Well, I guess we should go ahead and this is going to be interesting. We should kick it off. So, Aaron, is there fanfare? Is there, I don't know, like, do we just roll into it?
I don't know. You're doing the post edit on this. So, you tell me if there's fanfare.
So we're just rolling into this. We're going to start with our favorite supporting character of 2023. And as we know, for anyone who has not listened to the last 12 of these bitches, someone will start and then kick it off to the next one, and the majority rules for the winner of that category.
That is correct.
So, Aaron, since you're unmuted right now, why don't you go ahead and kick us off?
Highly scientific selection process. I was thinking about this category, and I was thinking about, when I think about the books that I've read this year and the characters in those books, and in particular the role a supporting character plays in supporting the narrative, supporting the protagonist, I really only had one character that just immediately leaped to mind, and it's Wong from the Strange book, where Clea is the Sorcerer Supreme of both the Dark Dimension and of Earth. And I really love the role that Wong plays in that book. Not only is he supporting Clea, he also supports driving the narrative forward. He instigates some stuff. I love that we get to see a side of Wong that I've never seen before in the pages of Doctor Strange. And I think that's just really great how much we've gotten to see fresh angles on this character that we've known for 50 years.
That is a really strong choice. That was actually my runner up. I went back and forth between two characters. One of them was Wong, and he ended up getting runner up because for me, Barbara Gordon pushed it over the edge in Nightwing. She, exactly everything you've described, she supported him. She pushes back on him. She drives him forward, and she's just been there throughout the entire run of the book as this force. So I went with Barbara Gordon.
So I will say this kind of was the year of Wong, right? For what it's worth.
Certainly in film,
Between the comic, his highlights in the comic books, as well as being in She-Hulk and
Doctor
Strange.
He was the best
Strange,
thing about She-Hulk.
And Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
He's been all it has been the year of Wong. Now that being said, as much as I have enjoyed Wong in those books, no character interaction made me smile more than the interactions between Dick Grayson and Barbara Gordon in the pages of Nightwing. So for me, Batgirl was my choice, or Barbara Gordon Batgirl was my choice for favorite supporting character, because every time she was on the page, it just made me smile. Plus, when she was on the page, typically Dogwing? Night That's Dog? Right.
Bitewing.
Bitewing. Bitewing was also on the page. And Haley, that made Bitewing. Me happy. Yeah, Haley was also on the page. And that made me smile too.
This is so awkward. Much like Aaron, I picked Wong. Not just for not just for Strange, but for all his other depictions this year. So for many of the same reasons, I picked Wong as my supporting character of the year.
You know, I'm happy with a tie because they were my number one and two choices.
Yeah, yeah. I thought real hard about Barbara Gordon as well, because I very much enjoyed her in the pages of Nightwing.
Should have thought harder. We could have had a winner. Now we have two losers. But Batgirl and Wong tied for favorite supporting character of 2023.
Well, will we have a clear, decisive favorite hero?
Well, first favorite villain.
There we go.
Because the better the villain, the better the hero, right?
That's true.
So I guess I'll go ahead and start us off on favorite villain. There were a number of good villain stories this year. And for me, obviously, there were some low-hanging fruit because Thanos had some great interpretations this year in comic media. Darkseid did not. But I think no villain was as prevalent in the comics that I read for as long as he was, as this character was, and that's Mongol. In the pages of the War World Saga in Action Comics, because the way, you know, the story written by Philip Kennedy Johnson of Superman's battle to liberate the refugees of War World was basically a 14-month long saga.
Right.
And in it, you saw many different interpretations of Mongol. You saw, you know, his history. You saw, you know, both the kind of the rise and fall of Mongol, who is, and the character really took on even more of a life than he ever has before. Now, it's a different Mongol, but you know, this character was, for me, the most menacing, the most impactful villain in the comics that I read this year. Runner up was going to be Blockbuster because I really liked the way Blockbuster was interpreted in the pages of Nightwing. Mm-hmm. But as far as pure menace and evil, and the fact that dude almost killed Superman, you know, did some horrible things, I went with Mongol. Mongol was my favorite villain of the year. So I guess we'll go with Wayne next.
So I think mine will probably be a standalone, but for me, I had kind of struggled with this one. I thought about all the books of the year, and villains weren't really standing out, except for one title, DC versus Vampires. Vampire King Dick Grayson is my vote for best villain, because not only was he vicious, successful, but he had a way of taunting the heroes that I always enjoy.
Andrew.
Oh, I was waiting for you, Aaron. But yes, sure, I'll go next. So when it comes to villains, some of my books very much lack a strong villain that I've been reading this year. But one that kind of reliably gives me kind of a nostalgic villain, a villain that's just kind of brutal and kind of unremittingly evil, are the Predators from the new Predator book from Marvel. I just love them when they show up on the screen. They're just single-minded. They're learning from Theta, and they're learning to hunt her as she's become, you know, kind of a bane and started to pick them off one to one. They've started to band together and work as a group. So I really would vote for the Predators from Kev Walker's book this year.
So I had two villains that I thought real hard about. And let me just back up and say I absolutely agree with you, Wayne. I don't feel like there has been a strong footprint of villains this year, or particularly of strong villains in the comics. You know, Paul, I can't get behind your choice of Mongol. I feel like
damn you, Aaron.
Yeah, I feel like Mongol was one of the weakest elements of that, 14-month storyline with Superman on Warworld. And while I enjoyed that series, it was everything else in the series that I enjoyed rather than Mongol. And, you know, I've enjoyed Mongol in the past, but, you know, I thought that that Mongol was not well represented in those pages. the two villains that I thought – the first villain that I thought the hardest about was Korvac in the pages of Iron Man. I really enjoyed his quest to regain his godlike abilities. And I also I felt like he had a real point of view. And I think that's always important when you've got a villain, is that you can, you know, see through their eyes and understand what's motivating them. And even in some cases, agree with them.
That's a really good call out. I had forgotten about him.
I really thought hard about Korvac, and then I thought hard about Thanos. And, you know, Thanos is kind of a perennial choice, but he had a really good year as well in the Eternal story by Kieran Gillen this year. And I know none of you guys are I don't think you're reading it. Are you, Andrew? The Eternals?
Yes, I was reading at the point that the Thanos had shown up. Yeah.
But, you know, in those pages, Thanos is almost not villainous. I wouldn't call him the hero of the story, but, you know, he's being used by another bad guy. And, you know, Thanos is just trying to, you know, correct his situation. And, you know, I think Thanos had some really good stories. This was a strangely good year for Thanos stories, whereas previous years I feel like he's been used too much. But I feel like we had some fresh perspectives on Thanos. But I really do think I have to go with Korvac. I think the story in the pages of Iron Man really reset that character, and the character has a really nice turn at the end of that story. So I'm sad to say that we have no clear winner.
Actually, Eric, I'm going to call an audible and change mine, because I forgot about Korvac, and you're right. He drove that series.
Pop. Whoa, controversy.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
I'm going to need some VAR. Deals,
changing
on this.
Votes.
Yeah.
Oh, we had a recount.
It's like we're in the U.S. Congress suddenly.
Right?
That's right. Okay. Mike Pence is going to stand up.
that's the Senate.
So Korvac from Iron Man. All right. All right.
That's crazy. Well, we talked about you know, Paul, your outline's different than mine. I'm sorry. I copied mine in a different order than you. So I have to focus on what's on the screen, not what's here on my iPad. But now we are to favorite hero. And I will launch us on favorite hero. And, you know, I feel like hero and supporting character go hand in hand. Mm. And really, my favorite hero this year was Clea in the pages of Strange.
Yep.
The sorcerer supreme of both the Dark Dimension and of Earth. The reason why I found her to be so compelling this year is very much the same reason why I nominated Wong for Best Supporting, is that we learn so much about Clea that in really 50 years of storytelling, I don't feel like we've gotten nearly as deeply dimensional of a portrait of her as we have in the pages of Strange. And I love how badass she is. I love how, you know, she's not, you know, a shining hero, you know, and I wouldn't characterize her as an anti-hero, but she is not, a paladin, right? She is, you know, fighting on behalf of that which we hold as good, but there is a darkness to her that I really appreciate, and I enjoy that conflict within her, and, you know, how she can go dark. I really enjoy that about Clea. So Clea is my choice for favorite hero.
Well, much like supporting character, I have to agree with you, Aaron. Clea was also my choice. I love how she kind of, you know, sidestepped into the mantle of Sorcerer Supreme. I love her interactions with the different, you know, Wong and the different characters she comes across, like Doom. And she's not just like a female copy of Stephen Strange. She's very much her own character.
Yeah.
And approaches, like, you can see her approach the situation. You have a good idea how Stephen would handle it. And she just does, 90 degree turn and approaches it completely different than he would. So I would also go with Clea.
And, you know,
she uses
a lot of
the cloak of levitation as a cloak, as a robe.
Bathrobe. There you go.
Yeah. In a lot of these, you know, books where, you know, they shuffle the original character off you know, off the stage and then, you know, have somebody else take on the mantle. A lot of those times you're reading those books, you're like, can we just get Bruce Wayne back? Well, you know, and I've not done that here. I mean, I'm like, I'm afraid they're going to end this story with Kalia before I'm ready for it to be over, because I am enjoying her as the Sorcerer Supreme. I think she's a hoot.
Well, how many times have we seen those types of stories where the person who's stepping into the role is kind of constantly second guessing themselves? Uh-huh. They're like, what would the original person have done who's left? You know, what would Bruce Wayne have done? But she does not do that. She is completely confident and fearless and does things her own way without second guessing herself.
Yeah, I love her. I think she's fantastic.
Agreed.
So do we have two votes for Kalia now?
We do.
Yep.
Wayne?
I'm going to make it a third because
it's a threesome
because of all the reasons described. But also, so often when you get these characters step into the role, they are second rate and they're not skilled. And she already knows what she's doing. She's already experienced. And in some ways, she's more powerful because she's the Sorcerer Supreme of two dimensions. So you get her stepping into the role, not taking shit from anybody, has the abilities, is fun to read, and she kept around his ghost dog.
Yep.
Gasp. I don't even know what to say. Nightwing saved the entire DC universe.
In a really crappy book.
Yeah.
I think the word, when he said DC, those are the two letters that don't resonate with
me. Yeah, Andrew doesn't know what those letters mean. Yes, my vote was for Nightwing, even though it doesn't matter anymore. My vote doesn't
count. It doesn't, Paul. Your vote doesn't count.
Because Kalia is the clear winner for favorite hero of 2023.
Woo!
All right. We actually have two categories with winners. Now, the next category, I'm going to go ahead and say, now, depending, we'll see what your next category is, Aaron.
No, I'm on board with okay. TV show.
So, favorite TV show based on a comic book. And this is a category from which I will actually abstain because I didn't watch any. I actually only saw like two episodes of Peacemaker. So, I mean, I guess that could be my de facto because I enjoyed those two episodes. But
I know you watched Moon Knight.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Even in the absence of other options, I can't in good conscience vote for Moon Knight.
You didn't watch She-Hulk either?
I did not. I only watched the first episode of She-Hulk. Ah. I watched a lot of first episodes. Moon Knight is the only one I actually watched all the episodes for, and it does not have my vote.
I think it says a lot that you only watched the first episode of so many things about the quality of shows that came out this year.
You know, I think that's... I would say that's part of it. I think this is my thoughts on this. I think I don't want to say I'm suffering from superhero burnout in my media, but I do see that the ability to, I mean, we are flush with comic book options. So this is not a complaint in the slightest. We talked about this last year. We are in the golden age of comic books, comic book characters being accepted as mainstream media. But we're also to the point where because they're so mainstream and because they're all over the place, I can kind of pick and choose what I want. It's not a special occasion every time something comes out. And so shows like She-Hulk, whereas I enjoyed the first episode, if it was a choice between, hey, you can catch up on She-Hulk or you can watch the latest season of a Taylor Sheridan show or Cobra Kai or something like that, I chose those other programs. Yeah, I mean, I think part of it was quality. Part of it was, you know, things that I didn't necessarily care for. But at the same time, I think that there's just too much TV and the characters or the first episodes of these TV shows didn't grip me enough to finish them. And with the exception being Moon Knight, which I just kind of hate finished. Because I love Moon Knight so much. Surely this will turn around.
I hear what you're saying about the quality of the superhero shows this year, but I stretched maybe the definition of comic book just a hair to include cartoons. I picked the Wednesday series on Netflix as my choice. Adam's Family was originally a cartoon that was published in The New Yorker back in the 30s and 40s before it became a TV series in the 60s. So I'm claiming that as its comic / cartoon roots.
Hold on. We're going to get a ruling here. Let me consult the independent
judges. If there was a Dick Tracy movie or a great Dick Tracy movie or TV show, I would vote the hell out of it.
So, it is defined as a comic strip. The International Panel of Judges deems that this is in bounds.
Very good. Very good. Right. I really, really enjoyed Wednesday. It was a fun show. It was one my wife and I look forward to watching every week, every time we had a chance to watch it. I loved Enid. The supporting cast around Wednesday was delightful as well, from the headmistress of the school down to the locals of Jericho. I just thought it was a really fun show and really
enjoyed. One of the things I thought was interesting about it is that it is far more based on the original comic strip with – you know, taking very little influence from any of the TV shows that came since.
Well, that is what I read from the Tim Burton, I think it was. That is what his source. That's why Gomez looks so much different than the other depictions of Gomez we have seen over the years, is because Gomez going back to that original cartoon.
Looks very much like the strip.
Yes.
Wayne?
So for me, there were multiple shows I enjoyed. I really like Superman and Lois. Now that Andrew has put it up for this discussion, I really did like Wednesday as well. But this was a clear winner for me. Peacemaker was just one of the greatest things I had seen on TV in a long time. It was fun. It was deep. The action scenes were good. John Cena really blew me away as an actor. It was an easy choice for me to give it to Peacemaker.
I absolutely agree. I think Peacemaker, yes, I agree with you, Paul, that there is a lot to choose from. I think what's great about the superhero genre is that you can tell any type of story with superheroes, and you can appeal to whatever niche audience that you're gunning for. For instance, you know, there's a lot out there that's not aimed at me. You know, that's aimed at, you know, other audiences, as, you know, represented by Ms. Marvel, for instance. While I watched the entire thing and I learned a lot about the Indian partition, you know, I thought that was, you know, intensely educational for me, for someone who had never heard of this this term before.
Wow, you hadn't?
It was not taught in school when I went to school. And I mean, while I was aware of that had happened, I'd never heard it referenced as the partition before. Anyway, I was fascinated by that, and it spurned me to go and, you know, read things about that, that circumstance. So, but you know, these things, you know, I think going back to my original point, I think it's great that there is such a diversity of superhero stories. You know, it doesn't all have to be a white guy's club of a certain age, right? But I got to tell you know, there was a lot that I didn't care for. I got to tell you, it blows me away that they're making a second season of Moon Knight, because I thought that the show was, while artistically, the artistic design of the show was brilliant, I think the storytelling was terrible. I'm stunned that they're making a second season of that show. But far and away, the thing that I have enjoyed the most this year is Peacemaker. And it's the thing that I've gone back and watched a second time. I think for all the reasons that Wayne stated, the show is terrific. It really demonstrates what a skillful storyteller James Gunn is, and why it reassures me that he's leading the DC movies. Now I'm super excited about what's coming, even though I am disappointed that we're not going to get, you know, another Henry Cavill Superman. But yeah, Peacemaker is my choice and the winner.
What? I mean, technically my vote was for the two episodes of Peacemaker I saw. So go Peacemaker.
Just abstention all of a sudden casting a vote.
Right. Well, I mean, I do have to finish the show now that, now that I'm on a lull from my Yellowstone shows, I have time.
Did you finish Tulsa King?
Yes.
Oh, look at you. We got to talk
about that. Too bad that's not based on a comic book.
It is. It is totally based on a comic. Sylvester Stallone doodled Tulsa King based on a comic.
There you go.
I don't think that's true.
Whatever, Andrew. You broke the rules already.
I'm pretty sure the judges ruled in my favor. Looking at you, Judge.
Yeah. So Peacemaker was our favorite TV show based on a comic book, and that leads us to our favorite movie based on a comic book. Now, I'm going to just a little bit of a reminder of the movies that came out this year in cinemas or streaming. We had movies like Black Adam, The Batman, DC League of Super Pets, Morbius, Thor, Love and Thunder, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. We also had a couple of DC animated films like Catwoman and Battle of the Super Sons. I think those are and of course, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. Yeah. I'd forgotten that was a late year entry. So, you know, lots of choices to choose from. Now, I guess I'll kick us off on this category. And I know I am in the minority here. I almost enjoyed none of the films I just listed. I certainly didn't enjoy any of the Marvel Studios movies that I saw this year. So of the two that I did enjoy, I enjoyed The Batman and I enjoyed Black Adam. And I know it's probably surprised no one to hear, but the film that I actually enjoyed the most from a comic book perspective this year was Black Adam. And it's the film I would watch again before I watched any of those other movies again. I thought Black Adam was fun. I thought it was, you know, exciting. I thought the action was good. I thought the acting was great. I enjoyed, you know, seeing the Justice Society, especially Pierce Brosnan. So for me, my vote for best movie of comic book movie, let me be straight, best comic book movie of 2023 was Black Adam.
Wow. So a spoiler for next year's funnies, maybe my holy shit moment of next year will be Paul choosing Black Adam.
Yeah.
I found that movie aggressively mediocre.
Okay, well, Wayne, what's your vote?
That's a commentary on the quality of the films this year.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Fair point. I mean, let me clarify. In a different year, I'm pretty sure Black Adam would not have won this category. In this year, it won this category. In fact, if it even came out last year, there's probably five movies I would choose above it. But this year, it was my top choice.
Well, I think my top choice is also going to continue this trend of identifying the quality of the movies out this year, because out of all of those movies, the one I went with was DC's League of Super Pets.
Okay.
It was fun. I enjoyed it. It was a kids movie, but it just I just loved it. And it has one of the best after credits scene of any DC movie ever.
Yeah, it is a very fun movie. I did enjoy that one.
Yeah, but in another year, it wouldn't have been in the running.
No.
So,
clear your throat, Aaron.
When I was thinking about, you know, my favorite movie based on a comic book, you know, it was readily apparent that my favorite movie of 2022 was not a comic book movie, though it feels like it was. And that was Everything Everywhere All at Once. That movie's fantastic. Best movie of 2022 by far. Maybe the best movie I've seen in the last 10 years. Fantastic film. But that is not qualifying for this category. So I got to tell you, it doesn't qualify. The movie I was gonna say, I just realized it's not based on a comic book. A superhero movie, and it's not based on a fucking comic book.
Were you gonna say Samaritan?
Yes.
That's why I didn't choose it.
Samaritan was fantastic. Loved you Samaritan. Can choose
it. It's lovingly inspired by
comics. Are the judges allowing me to choose it?
We'll allow it.
Yeah, maybe not in another year, but this year.
Samaritan was my favorite superhero movie this year. I not the least of which because of the fantastic turn it takes at the end of the film. I was blown away by this movie. There are elements of it that are such an 80s movie, but also having the maturity of, you know, a 21st century film. And this has been 2022 is a fantastic year for Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, it was a good year for Sylvester Stallone. It was Sylvester Stallone and Wong had a great 2022.
And, you know, Stallone's 75 years old.
Oh, my God.
Sit back on that and think about it for a minute.
Wow.
That guy is 75 years old. And, I mean, he looks amazing. He looks amazing. And I mean, he is believable as a superhero. He's believable as an Italian mobster living in Tulsa, Oklahoma. you can't go wrong with Stallone in 2022. You just can't.
Agreed.
So, Andrew, take us away.
Well, I didn't see Samaritan. I didn't see DC League of Super Pets. I did see Black Adam, which I thought was good, but I don't think I can give it my favorite comic book movie of 2022, though, I'm afraid.
Okay.
So I picked Thor: Love and Thunder. I have enjoyed the most. I know. Well, you dislike most superhero movies this year, to be fair.
True.
Yeah. So pretty much anything I would have picked besides Black Adam, you would have said that. You know, I really enjoyed this, most recent installment. I liked, seeing Lady Thor, Natalie Portman Thor, quite a bit. I enjoyed Christian Bale as Gore, the God Butcher. It was a fun movie. Again, in a different year, might not have won. But in this year, I think it was the best superhero movie I saw.
And, you know, of that group, Thor: Love and Thunder and Black Adam are the two that I would rewatch. I thought Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness was intensely forgettable. I enjoyed it when I was sitting in the theater.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can't think of a moment in that film that makes me want to go back and rewatch it.
Yeah.
So but I laughed out loud in Thor: Love and Thunder. And I recall enjoying it a whole lot, not the least of which being the depiction of Zeus.
I thought was
hysterical.
I definitely enjoyed Thor: Love and Thunder. For Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, Aaron, all the scenes I can think of that make me want to rewatch something of it, I could just watch on YouTube. Yeah. Like Patrick Stewart sliding in as Professor Xavier with the X-Men music playing.
Yeah,
I can just watch that on YouTube.
That's right. Well, and you know, let's not forget, you know, I walked out of Black Panther, Wakanda Forever.
Wow. Now, here's the thing. It was a good year for movies. There were some really great movies, I felt, in 2022. Uh-huh. Especially after a number of COVID years, and even some good action movies. I loved Top Gun and Bullet Train. But as far as comic book movies, you know, despite the fact that we had three Marvel releases this year, two DC releases, for me, none of them were, you know, were particularly memorable. Like, there are some that are rewatchable. I wouldn't say any are particularly memorable for being good.
I will say Bullet Train was probably my favorite actual movie of 2022.
It's great.
It is fantastic. And there is a nod to Marvel movies in Bullet Train, which I think is delightful.
And if you haven't seen it, it's on Netflix right now.
Yes, it is. My wife and I saw it in the theater. Highly recommended.
And so many great movies to recommend, just not comic book movies.
Yeah.
Sadly. But that being said, you know, we still came up with four options that are worth seeing: Black Adam, League of Super Pets, Samaritan, and Your Mileage May Vary, Thor: Love and Thunder. All right. And here's our favorite category coming up of every year: our favorite comic book cover of 2023.
Now, before you actually tell what your pick is, has the changes to Comixology impacted your ability to review covers?
I would say for me, the changes in Comixology, only in that it used to be a lot easier to know when the year ended. So like, okay, here were my January purchases. I could still sort them by release date, but I have to literally like click on the comic, open the comic, and click the info button to see, okay, did it come out in 2023? Whereas that used to be a lot easier in the previous app of Comixology.
That was my huge complaint, is that the filters that you have on the web page, at least, you have three filters: Kindle Unlimited, Prime Reading, and Comixology Unlimited.
Yeah.
None of those are filters I could use to help with this category. I had to go back and figure out what was the first book I bought of 2022 and what was the last book I bought of 2022, and just stick within that range.
And I'll tell you, I'm not gonna say this very loud, I bought a fuck ton of comic books this year. So that was a lot of scrolling on my end for this category.
No doubt.
I was like, oh, I'm only at August. Surely I thought I was done with the year by now. So no, good question, Andrew. I did find it a little bit difficult just from a navigation standpoint, not from an actual choosing standpoint. This year we had some beautiful covers. And if you are listening to this on iTunes or a podcast provider, all the covers are going to be on iomgeek.com on the Funny Book Awards post, or just Google them. It's 2023. You know how to Google. But that being said, Aaron, why don't you start us off? Because your cover was almost my choice.
Well, I got to tell you, one of the things that brought me the most delight this year was the Silver Surfer Rebirth series by Ron Mars and Ron Lim. And the cover for issue one scratched me right where I itch. It's got a beautiful, Ron Lim image of the Silver Surfer, swooping across the heavens with an image of the original Captain Marvel, in his red and blue suit, Marvel, if you will, behind him. And I love both of those, and I love both of those characters. I love the image, and it was like slipping back into the 90s with this book. And it was a terrific series and terrific covers on all of them, but the issue one was my favorite cover.
That's a good choice, and this is not the last time we're going to be talking about this book. Spoilers.
Andrew?
Yeah, I have trying to load mine into the chat right now.
Yeah, what the hell, Andrew? Yeah, everyone else has gotten their work done.
I thought I could just drag it over and drop it, but my computer's acting weird.
Maybe so, we do need to have a course on how to do these things.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Possibly. So mine is actually the one series I'm buying on a regular basis in physical copies where I'm going to a comic book store to get it, which is Junkyard Joe. The variant cover I bought at the store that day is the one that features, junk. It's all kind of like little cutouts. The central one being Junkyard Joe, and then the surrounding ones are the members of his platoon from Vietnam, and has their little pictures, little name underneath it. Not only was this, I think, a fun cover that I really enjoyed the art on, it also made reading the book, knowing who was who in that platoon, a lot easier. so when I'd be like, ooh, who's that guy? I could just flip to the front page, be like, oh, that's him. So not only beautiful, very functional. How about yourself, Paul?
For me, as I mentioned, Silver Surfer Rebirth number one was almost my selection, as was Wayne's cover. Those were all in contention, and I don't want to spoil what Wayne's cover is. But the one that I scrolled back to and I looked at and I looked hard at and I was like, you know what? This is the one. Was King of Spies issue 4 from Image Comics. So King of Spies, we talked about it on the podcast. The cover is by Matteo Scalera, as is the interior art. Is about an aging spy who finds out he has, brain tumor or something that's killing him. And he decides, you know what? Since I'm going to die anyway, I'm going to take down every bad guy, everybody, all the bad guys, the major bad guys, corrupt politicians, et cetera, but the agency he has previously worked for sends his son after him. And so the cover is very cinematic in nature. It shows the lead character, the Tower of London, his son surrounded by half-naked women and the bounty hunters who have been hunting him. And it's just it looks like a movie poster, and it's got a bit of a, not just a movie poster, but also kind of an old, Boris Vallejo vibe to it. It's just a beautiful cover. And for me, it was if I was not reading that book, that cover would have been enough to convince me to pick it up.
Yeah, it is a really strong cover. All of these are really strong covers. For me, I went with a different issue of Junkyard Joe. I went with issue number 3. The cover is the little girl walking across the snow with the silhouette of Junkyard Joe kind of in the background with the eyes glowing. And part of the reason I think I went with it is I look at it and it gives me an emotional attachment to the story that's in the book, that Geoff Johns has managed to make me love the family across the street from Junkyard Joe. So not only does the cover look good to me, it really reminds me of the story that's inside. And that's a strong thing for me.
Yeah, all four of these covers are beautiful. And, you know, I it's interesting to me that I think all of us have all four of these books. You know, it's not like, you know, somebody, you know, chose something that was, you know, way out in left field. These are all things that we've talked about on the show. You know, it's not coming from our independent pull piles from all those comics that we read that we never talk about because nobody else on the show reads them. But all of these are really strong covers. All of these, I find it interesting that all of us had these covers in contention. And we don't talk about what we're pulling on covers before these things. So I find that interesting as well. But, you know, I don't think we've ever had a clear winner in the covers
never.
Category.
Never.
We just kind of, you know, we'll share the number of covers and here you go. But yeah, all four of these are gorgeous.
Well, let's see if we have any clear winners for our holy shit moments of the year. Very exciting. The year that made you stand up and cheer or gasp or whatever. In comic books, it is not the purchase of an ice machine.
All right.
But, yeah, I, but write it down. 2023 is coming.
I just want to jump in on this one first because I feel strongly about this because when it happened, I believe I used the word "holy shit, this is horrible" in chat to you guys. That was Comixology's new website and app.
Yep.
Yeah.
I didn't put the word "holy" in front of it, but yes.
This
when I first saw it, it hit Android first, and I looked at it. It's like this is horrible. They can't do this. And then they did the same for, you know, the iPad and the website cut over. It was shocking how bad it was. And I always go with these meta moments because there are moments in comics that make me stand up and say, holy shit, but nothing as bad as the cut over to Comixology.
I mean, it is so bad. I have left since March, I believe, is when I left Comixology, and I've not gone back. And I don't read DC books anymore because of it. Well, that and that fact that my local shop doesn't carry DC books. But
what kind of comic shop doesn't carry DC comics?
We've talked about this on the show, right?
Yeah, but I don't listen to the things you say.
I won't waste my time repeating it. So, you know, yes, this was my holy shit moment of the year is that. And we've talked about it before, but the fact that you would take a fine product and you would take a great product, really, and you would take away so many of the things that make it great to water it down to fit into one of your other existing products so you can eventually basically get rid of Comixology and just wrap it all into Kindle. It drives me crazy. I think it's a horrible short-sighted idea, and it completely changed how I read comics.
Well, I'm going to make it the trifecta, guys. I agree. I think that the changes that were made at the beginning of 2022 in Comixology were my holy shit moment. I thought for sure when Wayne told us all this shit was happening in Android, I'm like, well, of course it's happening in Android. They would never do that over here on my iPad. And then, of course, you know, shortly thereafter, they fucked me. Thanks a lot, Jeff Bezos. But while I will say that later in the year, I felt like they had remediated a lot of what I hated about what they had done. I'm not encouraged by the news that we heard this week about the huge layoffs at Comixology.
Yeah.
I feel like that's going to be a bad thing. I have noticed, you know, changes in, you know, some of the things that I really enjoy, like the various and sundried sales that would pop up throughout the week, and you know how they're sort of minimizing I feel like, you know, personal input into the system. I feel like there are so many things that they could do to make the Comixology app better beyond just restoring what they took away last year. I feel like, you know, there are things that could build a greater comic book community and would get them more business. But I don't really think that's anything that Amazon is interested in.
They're not.
And, yeah, I don't feel like they're interested at all in really building this. And, you know, to your point, Andrew, I think they're just wanting to fold this into their Kindle technology and move on.
Yeah. I'm still frustrated by the simplest feature of I want a shopping cart. I want to buy my books all at once instead of individually. One by
one. Yeah.
Yeah, it's insane making what they've done. Yeah. It's just so it's so obvious that they're not doing this from a quality perspective. They're not doing it for customer satisfaction or to make a better product. They're doing it to simplify their workflow, their architecture, and to make more profit off of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to vote for the death of Guy Gardner in the pages of Human Target, but I feel like this was a much better option because I agree. No moment in comics was as offensive as what has been done to Comixology, you know, and to your point, Aaron, the 75% of staff that got laid off, that just really, it's Comixology is the cream of the crop as it relates to reading comics digitally, or used to be, right? And don't get me wrong, I still read my comics in Comixology. It's still from a reading perspective, pretty, you know, when you click on a comic and it opens up, the actual reading experience is generally the same, but the navigation of it, purchasing comics, it's all much more of a pain in the ass. I'm very concerned as to what the future is for Comixology.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. This is the first time I've been concerned about, oh shit, what's going to happen to my archive of comics. This is the first time I've legitimately been concerned about that.
Yes. And that occurred to me the other day with the laying off of the staff, because I'm like, what if they just were like, you know, Comixology is not a lucrative business. We're going to scrap it.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like, okay, well, then I'm going to a comic shop again, like Andrew, you know,
or you lose access to all those archives, right? Exactly. How many books, thousands of books we have through Comixology? Because
if you're really laying off 75% of your staff, and I imagine all those people were busy. Right. I imagine that all those people, that a large chunk of those people were involved in, you know, the scanning of the comics, you know, making the guided view work appropriately, because, you know, they'd release a comic on Tuesday and by Wednesday they'd have a new version of it because they corrected something in the guided view. I'm going to guess that kind of thing's not going to be quite so fast anymore. I'm going to guess that the guided view experience is going to be more automated through an AI than it will be a person making sure that the panels transition to support the story. You know, I feel like I have seen what an AI, you know, automated sort of a guided view experience is. And I think that happens a lot in the, you know, older archived comics where you don't have somebody just really determining how the story unfolds in the guided view. And those are not nearly as satisfying in the experience. I'm really concerned about what's going to happen here.
Yeah, I don't think the books are going to go anywhere. I don't think we're going to lose access to them. I think the app is going to go and it's all going to just be Kindle. And it's going to just fold into that. And access through the Kindle app, which is a pale comparison.
Correct. Well, here's the thing. I'm concerned about another something coming, because I saw that, like, hey, you know, now more than ever is the time to jump on these creator sites like Substack and stuff. I'm like, no, still no.
Yeah.
Like, now's the time for those 75% of Comixology people to pool their money and make a bid for Comixology and for Amazon to sell it off to people who are passionate about it.
I think Amazon would rather take the loss than to sell it off. They bought it because they wanted it. You know, they wanted to take it off the boards and fold some piece of that technology into their own. I don't think they would ever sell off what's there.
Yeah.
I would really like DC to relaunch their own app. They had it for many years. I don't know exactly the business reasons why they eliminated it, but I'd like to see DC relaunch their app and maybe they will.
Well, I think you kind of hit on it. If Comixology went away entirely, I wouldn't go back to stores. I would end up only getting probably the Marvel and DC books, but I wouldn't buy them weekly. I would end up going to the subscription services where you don't get them for a couple months. And that would be the end of my podcasting about comic books, because I wouldn't be up to date. It would really suck.
I mean, that is true. If I was not podcasting about comics, I already have Marvel Unlimited. I would just use it. I'd get DC Infinite and I would just read my comics that way.
Yeah. Well, I will not go back to paper.
I have said this before. The only reason I buy new issue comics is, you know, on the week they come out, is because we do this podcast and I enjoy doing the podcast and, you know, visiting with my friends every week about a thing we love. the experience to get harder for me. I think I would we would switch this podcast to something more like, hey, what can you read over in DC Infinite and Marvel Unlimited? Yeah. You know, I think we might be having those conversations, or, you know, shift altogether. But
2 month old funny books with Aaron and Pauly.
That's right.
I think what we're saying is, Amazon, don't kill our friendship. Don't kill our podcast. Do the right thing.
We could relaunch Cardboard Crack.
There you go.
Yeah, no, Wizards of the Coast is another company I don't want to give money to right now.
let's talk about a happier subject.
Right.
Let's pivot away from the doom and gloom and my personal sense of loss and grief, and move on to our next category, which is favorite limited series or OGN. I've not gone first. I know other people are going to pick this. So I'm going to get in first. Aaron mentioned earlier with his favorite cover. Ron Lim's Silver Surfer Rebirth with Ron Mars, Ron Lim, the Rons. Unbelievably nostalgic. Loved it. I like how Thanos was not the antagonist of this one. I liked how there was a third party that the Silver Surfer and Thanos had to team up against. The art was beautiful and gorgeous through every issue. I would definitely call that my favorite limited series of the year.
Now, I'm going to agree with Andrew. Silver Surfer Rebirth absolutely was my favorite miniseries or limited series of the year, or original graphic novel, and of which I actually read a couple of them, right? Those Batman One Bad Day books came out this year. Batman Spawn, which was terrible, but you know my point. But Silver Surfer Rebirth, far and away, was my favorite. Well, I shouldn't say far and away, because there was a very close runner-up, and that very close runner-up was Predator.
Is that a limited series?
Yeah, the last issue just came out in January. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Predator was, well, let me clarify. There is another miniseries coming of Predator, I think from the same creative team. But yeah, this first miniseries just ended. So that was damn close. But I mean, Silver Surfer Rebirth just scratched me right where I itch, with two of my favorite creators on one of my favorite characters. And that character is one of my favorite characters because of those creators. And I'm just psyched to see what they do this year with Warlock and the Infinity Watch.
Chung variant cover that revealed this week was pretty smoking.
It was beautiful.
Yeah. So Silver Surfer Rebirth for me as well.
Well, I've read a lot of limited series this year that I really liked. An early favorite of mine was Sword of Hyperborea. It is a follow-up to Mike Mignola's BPRD books, you know, really delving into that character. I also in the wheelhouse of Mike Mignola, Radio Spaceman was freaking fantastic. Yeah. I really enjoyed Radio Spaceman. And then, you know, we talked about the cover a little bit ago, King of Spies from Mark Miller, was just wonderful. But the limited series that I have to say, I think did so much to reinvent the characters, that really told a story with these characters that have been around for almost 50 years, that, you know, just came out of left field for me, was Eternals. I freaking love the Eternals, and you know, the 12 issue, and there's also some odds and ends annuals and one shots in there as well. But the Eternals story just really kind of flipped it on its head, on what the Eternals are all about and how they remain eternal. It created a brand new mythology for them. I freaking love that story. And Eternals is my nomination for limited series.
So mine is one that I'm pretty sure no one else on here read. I have a rule. I don't, basically after being burned in previous years, I will not put a limited series up unless the last issue has come out.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to make sure it sticks the landing.
Fair. So, we discovered that with Joker, for sure. Yep.
So mine is actually one I was only able to add because the last issue came out this week and it did stick the landing. Batman Fortress. I really enjoyed that book. It is a Batman miniseries that is very Superman heavy as well. It feels like a strong Elseworlds story. Aliens show up to attack the Earth, basically, and take out all technology. And when this happens, Superman is nowhere to be seen. And that's the big mystery of the book is, where is Superman? What happened to him? And I said it managed to stick the landing with an ending I didn't see coming that I had loved. So Batman Fortress is really good.
So no clear winner.
Oh, no, we have a clear winner.
Yeah, come on, Aaron.
Yeah, Aaron. Don't try to take it away from us.
Paul's vote doesn't count.
Did we just decide that for this category?
Yes.
Winner. Our winner.
Okay. All right. We'll give it to you this time.
Woo! Silver Surfer Rebirth. Yeah. No. A great, great series. And I have a great interest in reading that Batman Fortress. I never got around to it. I bought the first issue and just never read it, and so need to finish it off. But it's also written by Gary Whitta, who was one of the co-writers of Star Wars Rogue One. That's one of the things that really interested me about it. So, I'll try to get to it now that it's all out. Well, we are in our top categories of the year, our last five, starting with our favorite comic book writer of 2023. And Aaron, you haven't started us in a while, so why don't you kick us off on this one?
You know, my favorite writer is the writer of my favorite limited series. Kieran Gillen, had a terrific year. He, wrote the Eternals books. He wrote the AXE Judgment Day crossover there at Marvel. And it is one of those rare occasions where a crossover event happened and it stuck the landing. I think that's all completely owed to Kieran Gillen. Kieran Gillen is like Thanos, is a perennial favorite on this show. He has done so much over the years. And I really think you could kind of look at our Funny Books enterprise as a chronicle of Kieran Gillen and all of his wonderful works. Because we have extolled his virtues from our very earliest days of him writing some of the X-Men books. Mm-hmm. Through all the various iterations, I'm still waiting for you to finish off Uber, Kieran Gillen. But
I don't think that comic company exists anymore, does it?
It does not.
Avatar does not exist anymore.
And there was talk about a Kickstarter to fund the last bit of that, but I don't think that's ever happened. So anyhow, Kieran Gillen, he's my guy this year for best writer.
Okay. I'll go ahead and go next because it would probably surprise no one to hear that my favorite comic book writer of the year is going to be Tom Taylor. I think he was my vote last year, and I kind of wish Nightwing issue 100 had been released last year because that would have cemented it even more.
Yeah, it was a terrific book. Nightwing 100 was great.
It was absolutely fantastic. Yeah. No writer wrote books that I enjoyed as consistently as Tom Taylor. He even though Deceased, this current iteration of Deceased, doesn't quite have the same magic as previous versions of or previous miniseries of Deceased, it's still good. He also wrote the excellent Superman Son of Kal-El book starring Jonathan Kent. Very prevalent in the media this year. Nightwing, I've already talked about Nightwing, and I will continue to talk about Nightwing here soon. Spoilers. he also did that Marvel book, I think the Dark Ages, that we enjoyed as well.
Well, so, it did not stick the ending.
It did not stick the ending, yeah. I will say. It did not stick the ending, and I'm wondering if part of that has to do with the fact that he signed this exclusive deal with DC, so he had to put a capper on it.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, for me, Tom Taylor was the most consistently entertaining writer who wrote the moments that made me enjoy comics the most this year. And there were some great writers. Don't get me wrong. Jeff Johns had a banner year, too.
Mention him, Paul, because Jeff Johns is my vote. I really thought about Tom Taylor, and if it wasn't for the downward spiral of Deceased, he would have got my vote again because he did some really good books. But I looked through Jeff Johns' work this year, and what got me is the range of books that he did. So Junkyard Joe, obviously huge for us. We've already talked about it multiple times. But Flashpoint Beyond,
mm-hmm.
The Stargirl book, like here
the
and
new
there,
Golden Age.
Yeah, the new Golden Age is like these are all very different books, and it's just like he is one of my favorites overall over time. But this year felt like the year of his return after not having seen much of him lately.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he came back really strong. So that's what kind of pushed him over the edge for me. And honestly, it was less of a pushing him over the edge and more of Tom Taylor jumped the shark with Deceased.
Okay. That Jeff, I mean, I have no qualms about supporting your vote for Geoff Johns. Andrew?
Well, you want to know something you probably will have trouble with or have an issue with, perhaps? I'm going to pick Rainbow Rowell. Rowell. I'm not sure how to pronounce the last name. She brought a She-Hulk book that I have enjoyed every issue of. It is not a typical superhero book, but, every week it comes out. And there have been some delays. I do acknowledge that. But every week, every month it does come out. It's funny. I love the relationship she's established with different people in the MCU between Jennifer Walters and herself. It is much better than the TV series they had of the same name. So that's who I would pick for my favorite writer this year.
I had a lot of writers on my list this year, like Ed Brisson from Predator. Obviously, Tom Taylor. I had Ron Mars as well. There's a lot of terrific writing happening in comics now, which is why, we don't have a clear winner here.
Yeah, we don't.
Because they're all fantastic.
You know, and for me, Aaron, I had an issue with a good issue with favorite artist, which is our next category.
Yeah, it's an embarrassment of riches.
It is.
Yeah. Aaron, who did you go with again for writer?
Kieran Gillen.
That's right. I thought you might have mentioned one of my other runner-up was Jeb McKay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, also a great
strong year for him.
Mm-hmm. For me, I had a couple of different options to choose from for favorite artist.
I had two.
I had four.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to decide live on the podcast.
Uh-oh.
No, I bolded which one actually won for me because I was like, I truly loved the Kev Walker art in Predator miniseries, both humans and the spaceships.
Mm-hmm.
Bruno Redondo did things in Nightwing that, are some of my favorite moments in comics.
Mm-hmm.
In 2023, Gary Frank, we've extolled the virtues of Gary Frank and Junkyard Joe this year repeatedly. But for me, the return to regular sequential comic book art of Ron Lim made him my winner because Ron Lim is one of the reasons I am on this podcast to begin
with. He is comic book royalty.
Yeah. And he has not missed a beat in 30 years, 40 years, maybe.
Well, Paul, it's funny. You and I chose two of the same people. And when I think about comics art, who my favorite artist is, I look for consistency. Are they delivering every time, right? And Kev Walker, I think is drawing at the top of his game. What he did in the pages of Predator, I feel like is some of the best work he's ever done. And we talked about it when we talked about Predator, about how well designed the technology is and how well told the story is from a visual perspective. I think Kev Walker is just killing it in the in the pages of Predator. I went with Bruno Redondo from Nightwing. Every time those books come out, they are just gorgeous. And they're as wonderful as the narrative is written by Tom Taylor. You could pull those words out and just look at the pages, and that would be enough for me. Right. I mean, the Bruno Redondo art is just spectacular. And so Bruno Redondo for Nightwing is my artist of the year.
Especially that one issue that was one long panel.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Like just amazing, amazing art.
He is intensely gifted.
Mm-hmm.
So, Wayne.
Well, you're going to get a second vote for him because I also went with Bruno Redondo for the Nightwing books are just
they're gorgeous. Said,
yeah, yeah. So you can tell the story with the art, and that's a big part of it.
That's what defines comic books, right?
Yep.
Yes. It's a visual medium. For myself, I had many of the same people that you guys have mentioned, you know, Ron Lim on Silver Surfer Rebirth. Gary Frank on Junkyard Joe. Mm-hmm. Amazing. But I went with Kev Walker on Predator. For much of what Aaron said when he was talking about whoever had mentioned when they're talking about it. I think it was Paul. It was Paul when Paul was talking about him. You know, he does the science fiction so well. He does the machinery and the spaceships so well, as well as the many different alien races that he developed and created for it, and as well as the aliens and the humans, and takes a very realistic view of what they would look like. I went with Kev Walker for mainly for his work on Predator this year.
Can't go wrong with Kev.
You can't. I mean, these are all great artists. Yeah. I mean, Bruno Redondo winning is the right choice, right? Yeah. I am fully supporting Bruno Redondo. I mean, just if you have not picked up Nightwing after all we've said about Nightwing, you are a fool. That's all I gotta say.
Just call me a fool. Call me a fool.
Or your comic book shop doesn't sell DC comics for some.
It's crazy. Well, you know, the thing about Nightwing is it's a feel good book. The ending panels of those stories are usually uplifting, right?
It's the Ted Lasso of comic books.
Yeah.
And Andrew, I highly suggest you start buying the trades of it, because
I could do that. Yeah.
Those you could get.
Yeah. I can get the trades. I just can't get the monthlies. I gotta say, does Dark Nightwing suddenly start to get a little bit dark in the second season like Ted Lasso did?
No. I mean, a little bit. But
okay.
it turns around. Right. Well, you know, I have less positive things to say about my favorite event or crossover, at least as far as the ones I read. I already know what Aaron's going to vote for.
You don't know.
I know what Aaron's going to vote for. But it felt like comic books released an event or crossover pretty much almost all year. There was some type of something going on, or multiple things, whether it was Spider-Man's Dark Web, or, you know, this Dawn of DC, or just nonstop. Dark Crisis, Flashpoint Beyond, it was nonstop. It felt like, to the point where we were even complaining, like, why does DC release Dark Crisis and Flashpoint Beyond on the same damn day? Like, can you space out your events? Now, for me, it ultimately ended up coming down to of the events that came out this year, the two that I appreciated the most were Batman versus Robin and Flashpoint Beyond. And the one that I felt got better over time, started off a little tough, but got better with each passing issue and ended strong, stuck the landing in a way that the other didn't, was Flashpoint Beyond. I thought Flashpoint Beyond stuck the ending in a way that most event books don't, and in the way that Geoff Johns doesn't always either. But the ending was great on Flashpoint Beyond. And so for that and for what's coming out of it, we have a new Justice Society series that, I don't know, seems to be significantly delayed. We've got the new Golden Age. We've got the new Stargirl book. There are good things coming out of it. My vote went to Flashpoint Beyond.
Yeah, the fact that I gave Geoff Johns my best writer might be a hint towards mine, because I agree with you, Paul. I don't know that it would have been the strongest in another year that had better crossovers, because I hated most of the crossovers and events this year, even ones that had moments I enjoyed. Like, Dark Crisis had some moments in it that I enjoyed, but it did not stick the landing, and it had a lot more bad issues than good.
Well, and I got to say, Dark Crisis is probably DC's worst event book that since we've been podcasting.
Yeah. Final Crisis.
Yeah, that includes Final Crisis, quite frankly. Yeah.
Does that include Death Metal?
Yes.
Wow. Death Metal was far more enjoyable than
It was incomprehensible, but I actually enjoyed it more.
Huh. Yeah, so no, I'm also voting for Flashpoint Beyond, because like you said, it stuck the landing, and it was a book I did not expect to like.
Yeah, I would agree. So one more point on your question, Andrew. I think the difference between Death Metal and Dark Crisis for me is that Death Metal felt like a book that was written by someone who was passionate about something that I'm not passionate about. Dark Crisis felt like it was written by someone with no passion. It felt like it was written by a committee.
That's what I was about to say. Dark Crisis didn't feel like it was written by a person. It felt like it was written by a group of people, like a whole committee that were, you know, couldn't make up their mind what they wanted, so they just threw everything in.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe it was written by ChatGPT.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Well, Aaron.
Yep. I want to see what Aaron has here.
My favorite crossover event this year, I've talked about it before, AXE Judgment Day by
I knew it.
Yeah, me too.
I
knew it.
I got to tell you, I know I'm the only one on the podcast who read those books, but, you know, it did what crossovers are supposed to do. One, it told a terrific, compelling story. It made you want to read the other books that were tied in. You know, it brought in the Avengers, the Eternals, and the X-Men, and it made you want to read those. And, you know, it convinced me that I would read a Kieran Gillen Avengers book. I would read a Kieran Gillen X-Men book, and have. I would also like to see Kieran Gillen over on the pages of Fantastic Four. He is so thoughtful and gets so deep into the characters and, you know, really explores their motivation and what drives them. I really dug what he did in the pages of Judgment Day, man. So that is my choice, my selection. So there you go. Yet another no winner.
Well, hold on. We don't have a vote for, well, we do. Well, we have two votes for Flashpoint Beyond, but let's see what Andrew votes. And it won't be Flashpoint Beyond.
It's not, because that's from DC. You know, the thing is, actually, and I spent quite a bit of time last evening verifying this, I did not read a single event book or crossover book this year.
Oh, wow.
Not a single one. I did not do AVX. I obviously did none of the DC events, whatnot. Everything I read this year was a single contained story. Even the stuff like, you know, Moon Knight, She-Hulk, stuff that you might expect to see a crossover, and not a one, which has been kind of nice because it avoided that disruption to the main storyline by keeping it out. So I have no vote in this category.
Okay. So Flashpoint Beyond goes to show you that Geoff Johns is probably the only one who can write a good DC event book.
Don't you feel like they're going to be tapping Tom Taylor to do some sort of Justice League crossover event in his new role as Justice League guy?
I am shocked that they haven't yet.
Yeah,
I will tell you. And
I'm sure it'll come out, you know, once the first issues of that debut. I'm certain they'll announce an upcoming crossover. I mean, it would just be shocking if they didn't.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
All right. We are down to our top two, our favorite new series and our favorite ongoing series.
And then there were two.
Dun, dun, dun.
These were both very tough categories for me for different reasons.
Are they really different reasons, though?
For me, it was. Maybe you guys not, but for me, it was. They were hard for different reasons.
Tell us about new series, Andrew.
Yeah.
So the reason I had a hard time picking this one is because I had a lot of new series that I enjoyed this year. You know, Junkyard Joe, She-Hulk, Predator, you know, Strange. These are all things we've talked throughout this show, so I don't need to go into why I enjoyed them so much. So trying to pick one amongst them was very tough for me. But after consideration, thoughtfulness – oh, I guess Predator is technically a limited series, so I guess I should have not worried about that one. But after thinking about it, I'm going to go with Strange. I've really enjoyed seeing Clea as the new Sorcerer Supreme of Earth. I've enjoyed seeing her interactions with Wong and Doom and Bats, and I've enjoyed the storylines they put forth. So for me, my favorite new series of 2022 is Strange.
Well, for me, there really was no competition in terms of identifying what my favorite new series was. Yeah, I really enjoy Strange. But the thing that really knocked my socks off this year, the thing that I thought for sure was going to suck because of how long I had to wait for it, was Junkyard Joe. And, you know, I am moved in every single issue. I am entertained. I love it. I can't wait for more. It's got me so excited about the universe of Geoff Johns books and Gary Frank books that are coming out through Image. I can't say enough good and positive about Junkyard Joe. So Junkyard Joe is my selection.
Yeah, that's another one I struggled with. That it was a great. That's a great choice.
I will mirror. I cut off Wayne's vote because it doesn't matter.
Yeah, fuck Wayne.
Especially because my vote is also for Junkyard Joe. It was to everyone's point. Great year for new series. Great year for a limited series. You know, I actually considered a left field choice of Canary.
I thought the same.
Yeah, it was also on my runner up list.
Now, Canary, if you are a Comixology Unlimited member, is included in the cost of your membership. It's written by Scott Snyder, art by Dan Panosian. There's a name that you haven't heard in a long time. Yeah. And it's just a fantastic horror Western book. But yeah, for all the reasons we've described, not for the least of which is it is of the books that I read this year, the one that touched me most, like touched me in the feels.
Yeah.
You know,
it's surprising because no one thought you had any feels, Paul.
Yeah. Jeff Johns knew. Well,
and it's a character that doesn't talk.
Yeah.
You just basically have to write E.T. but with a robot instead of an alien. And that's all it takes for me.
Yeah.
So 100%.
Yeah. All of my runner-ups have been mentioned. I thought about She-Hulk. I thought about Strange. I thought about Canary, but I eliminated it because there aren't enough issues out yet. Mm-hmm. But in the end, it goes to the things that you guys have already said. As much as I loved Strange and it was my runner-up, Junkyard Joe just has accomplished so much in so few issues.
Yeah, it really has. I am deeply impressed at how strong all the storytelling, visual narrative, etc. on Junkyard Joe is. And, you know, how it just hits you, you know, right in the gut mm-hmm. in this book. I mean, Junkyard Joe is just demonstrative of such strong storytelling.
Yeah, it's a good pick. It's a good winner.
And wait, not to call bullshit because you agreed with my vote, but Canary actually has more issues out than Junkyard Joe.
Boom.
I thought Canary only had three out.
Four.
I have not read the fourth yet.
It's good. It's real good.
Well, you know, likewise, you know, compelling storytelling is what guided me into my favorite ongoing series. And also generally hits me right in the feels. And as I've mentioned before, it usually ends in a rather uplifting manner. You know, there is a reason why Dick Grayson is so respected mm-hmm. by his fellow characters throughout the DC books. And that's because he is a very positive character. You know, he sees the glasses half full. You know, he finds alternative solutions. You know, he is, while he's going to punch you in the face if you're doing bad, he, you know, is going to look for, you know, new ways to solve problems. And that's why Nightwing is my favorite ongoing series. I can't say enough good about this book. It is the book I read first when it comes out each month. I love that book. It's a terrific book. Wayne?
I'm seconding your vote. Nightwing is just the most consistently good book that I've read in years. It hasn't had the dips. When there's a crossover, you might get frustrated because the story you're reading takes a break, but it even manages to do the crossovers well.
Even the annual was good.
Yeah, that's saying something. Even the annual was good because the annuals
used to beat the shit.
Yeah.
But no, they haven't been in a long time. Even the annual was good for Nightwing. I mean, clearly my vote was for Nightwing as my favorite ongoing series. I will say, I actually, for half a beat, this may be shocking, considered Batman. Since Chip Zdarsky took over Batman, you know, he finished his run on Batman the Night and moved over to the main Batman title. And at first I was like, I've read this story before. But I have truly enjoyed what he has done on the book, and he has made Batman as a comic exciting for me again, not the least of which, speaking of Robins, is his level of respect for Tim Drake and how he has integrated Tim Drake as a main character in the Batman book again, and I just love that. But regardless, there is no book that is as consistently good and feel good and well drawn and well written and has such great character interactions as Nightwing. So Nightwing was my vote.
Yeah, so I had a hard time with this one because there's really only one ongoing series I'm currently reading, which is Moon Knight by Jed MacKay. And I enjoy it. I do not have the effusive things to say about it like you guys do for Nightwing. So I mean, by as it's the only ongoing series I'm reading, I would say Moon Knight, but I was kind of at a loss. I thought about just not voting for anything at all as well. So that was my issue with ongoing series.
Well, so Nightwing has it.
Woo! Surprising no one, because I think Nightwing had it last year.
It's a good book.
Maybe Santa will bring me Nightwing and trades next year.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Hey, Paul.
Oh, shit.
Someone's unprepared.
I am ready, Aaron. What would you like to know?
What's coming out next week?
Well, the big news next week, or the big release next week, is that the Dawn of DC begins in the first supersized issue of the newly revamped Action Comics. For those who are unaware, Action Comics issue 1051 begins the new era where there are multiple stories in Action Comics, one focused on Superman proper and other stories focused on the other Superman family. This is the book that also introduces the new costumes designed by Dan Mora. So the main art writer is Philip K. Johnson, but Dan Jurgens is also one of the writers on the book. Leah Williams, Dan Mora, Lee Weeks on art, Marguerite Savage. I mean, just a great, great creative team taking on the new Dawn of DC book, Action Comics. We also get the continuation of Lazarus Planet, the Mark Waid crossover spinning out of Batman versus Robin. We finally get the second issue of Justice Society of America from Geoff Johns. I think we were just talking about how, like, the first issue came out and then it feels like it's been a few months since then. For Aaron, Kieran Gillen writes the new X-Men crossover Sins of Sinister with art by Lanil Francis Yu.
I do like me some Lanil Francis Yu.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'll leave you up to that. I'll leave that one up to you.
Let's take a look. I'm not a big fan of Sinister.
I've always liked Mr. Sinister, but not in recent years. Well, also from Marvel Comics, we get the continuation of Dark Web in Amazing Spider-Man. We also get the Thanos, the legacy of Thanos continues in the pages of Thor. We also get the newest issues of Junkyard Joe, issue 4. Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, part 2, issue 2 comes out as well. Wayne from Dynamite Comics, the first issue of Darkwing Duck comes out.
Picking it up.
There are quite a few books coming out next week.
It's all very exciting. Well, we'll be right back here to talk about, you know, books coming out in 2023 so that you can get started early for next year's Funny, the 14th annual Funny Book Awards.
Woo!
Woo! Woo!
We will see you then. Oh, wait, before we go.
What?
Aaron, we cannot leave without giving up the new IOM Geek hotline number.
Oh, that's what? True. That's true.
Do you have to look it
up? I do. I think I've got it.
Now who's unprepared?
I know, right? Who remembers this stuff? So, yeah, you know, we want to know what you thought about the funnies. You know, what did you like that we chose? What do you hate that we chose? I'm sure it's something that Paul said. Anyway, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 682-800-3494. That number, once again, 682-800-3494. And if we use your voicemail on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
Wow, that is that does not roll off the tongue like the
it
old
does
number
not.
Does. So if you don't remember that number, you can always hit us up on at IOMGeek on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.
Very good. Well, guys, let's do it all again next week. Not the funnies, but reading comic books and stuff.
Yeah. Jesus, that took a lot of preparation. Do not make me do it again.
Bye. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.